Start again. All right, so this is Anne Marie Williams with Public Words Project, and I am sitting with a very good friend and a very talented woman. And can you tell me your full name?
Hi, I am Romy Diaz, and I'm happy to be sitting here and speaking with you today.
So we're going to spend a little time getting to know you. I know you pretty well. I know you well, but I want to get to know you more. And then I want you to share your experience of how you became who you are right now, so that all the little boys and girls out there can grow up and be just like you.
Sounds good.
So we're just going to do some like light questions before we start diving into stuff. So I always like to know more about the person I'm talking to. So tell me, where are you from?
I was born and raised in Newark, New Jersey. Brick City.
I did not know that.
You look so shocked.
I didn't know that.
Newark, New Jersey.
I love New Jersey. You guys have White Castle.
We do. We do. Yeah, lots of fast food chains. And I had the privilege of going to the first performing arts high school. First in our country, before LaGuardia in New York even.
Really?
Yeah.
It was there.
I started my training pretty early.
How early was that?
I think I was about 12 years old and then turned 13 when I went into my freshman year at Arts High School.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you just knew from the start.
I knew from the start, and I was performing before that. I was in my first play at age 5.
Wow.
I remember very vividly I was playing Winnie the Pooh, and I wanted to play Winnie the Pooh even though I knew I couldn't do the physical things that they were going to be asking of me.
So
in other words, like a forward roll.
That's what I was going to ask you.
You know, and those little somersaults. But somehow I managed to finagle it, and I played Winnie.
Nice.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the one thing that's nice about this is I'm getting to know more about the people that I'm familiar with. And like,
right.
I'm getting to know you. I didn't know that about you.
Yeah.
That's why this is such a smart.
This is so cool.
We have an additional guest who, her name is Pumpkin, and she's a wonderful Chihuahua, and she's on my lap right now.
Yes, she is. She's listening intently.
Yes, and she may give some comment during this.
She may.
And that's just perfect to me.
Right.
Because doggies are awesome.
Rescue dogs.
Rescue dogs are, that is a rescue dog.
That's right.
Yeah, so is Maggie. Okay, so we know a little bit about where you're from, and we're gonna delve into that some more. So, like, tell me what your favorite word is.
My favorite word. Well, my boyfriend Paul says that I say perfunctory a lot. So that says something. But I am a lover of words. I'm a lover of language.
But tell me why that word, the definition and why that word.
Perfunctory, something that you just sort of, you know, go through the motions with.
Okay.
I like the way it sounds. I like the way it feels.
It does sound good.
Yeah.
It does sound.
And then you have the P, which is a plosive, right? And you got some funk in there.
I love
it. So let's take it from there. Perfunctory.
This is fun. I didn't know this was going to be this fun. I had an idea, but, and then what's your favorite food, girl?
My favorite food? That's tough. I mean, I love food, right?
Mm-hmm. We all do.
Yeah.
That's the problem.
I know.
Okay, so we've had a mac and cheese.
Mm-hmm. You and I went to the fried chicken spot.
Oh, yeah.
That opened up at Grand Central Market called Lucky Bird.
Mm-hmm.
Shameless plug for Lucky Bird.
Woo-woo.
If you guys are listening, the best fried chicken in Los Angeles.
At Grand Central Market.
Yep, called Lucky Bird. And you and I shared that meal together. That was pretty awesome.
So we're going to go with fried chicken?
Fried chicken and pickled vegetables.
Oh, my God, that's right.
Yeah.
So if you're a vegan, turn the radio off now.
Yeah, I eat a lot of soups. I like comfort food. Yeah.
Soups are so creative.
Mm-hmm.
I find them to be a creative food. Good. All right, we get to know a little bit about you. So, all right. What do you do now?
What do I do now? Well, I've been auditioning an awful lot lately.
Good.
Which is great. And as a matter of fact, I went to one yesterday and I wrenched my knee during the audition. So I'm resting up today, but that's, you know, sort of perils of acting, I guess.
Yeah.
So doing a lot of auditioning.
I'm sorry about your knee, but what a sacrifice.
Yeah, I think that they were kind of surprised I even took the fall, but I said, why not? Let's do this.
Why not? And okay, you can cast me now.
Right.
That's how you can make it up to me.
Let's get that part.
But right as you're saying that right now, sorry, I got to control my level. You are also, I am Anne Marie Williams, and you were just recently Captain Williams.
Chief Miranda Williams.
Chief Miranda Williams.
Fire Chief. Mm-hmm.
Tell me about that, because you know I watched that like 4 times.
Oh, yeah. That was such a great show to be a part of. And what a great role, right?
That show was 911.
911 on Fox.
Produced by Angela Bassett.
Yes, and starring Angela Bassett, Peter Krause.
Yeah.
Some great folks, Jennifer Love Hewitt. And I got to play with them for a couple of episodes.
Nice.
The Earthquake Hits LA episodes. And we need a fire chief. So they brought me on in to be the incident commander.
I got the biggest kick out of it because if you meet Romy, she's a beautiful girly girl. And she, you know, you pushed it up a little bit. You look tough. And if you were my captain or chief, battalion chief.
Chief, that's right.
Mm-hmm. I would be, ma'am, yes, ma'am. Yep. And you played the role really well.
Thanks.
Because I know you, and it's fun when you watch your friends who act, and you convinced me.
Right.
Even while I knew you. So that's talent, girl. Props to you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yay. I like playing powerful women. I've said this in interviews before. I think it's really important that we women of color accept the roles that will further encourage and elevate our perception in the world. So I've never, and kudos to the women, especially the Latino women who had to be the pioneers in this field, but I've never played a maid. I've never played those roles, and they were integral, right?
Yeah.
Back in the day, but there's so much being written for us now that is so much more positive and powerful. And so getting this opportunity to play the fire chief was really sort of an exceptional moment for me in my career.
That's congratulations.
Thank
everything you.
You
said right now just makes rings so true. Mm-hmm. And I celebrate you for that, honestly, because there's many, many people who played some roles.
Yeah, but they were,
their talent was grander than that.
Yeah. Fortunately, there's an enlightenment that's been happening, and we have a lot of amazing writers, producers, directors that are on this level now, and our playing field has grown tremendously.
So that I saw you do that role. Tell me some more about what you're doing right now. So you're auditioning, you're sacrificing your body for the arts.
Yeah, to hopefully get another role. And I just did another show. I don't know if I can say at the moment.
That's fine.
But I played a judge. So,
nice.
You know.
We're going to have to do like a little snippet of videos. Power Woman, bye.
Power Women,
by
yes.
Romy.
Absolutely. Judge Rivera.
Nice.
Yeah, and it's going to be a great show. It'll be up on Bravo. So we'll have to fill you in when that airs.
Yeah, just let me know.
Yep. And
we'll shoot it out.
Yeah, so that's sort of the deal. It's sort of, you know, the process of being an actor in LA. You work really hard and then you wait sometimes for a long period of time.
Yeah. That's also the entrepreneurial spirit too. You work really hard and you wait. You work really hard and fast and you wait.
Yeah.
So, and acting, one of the, I guess I see that tie-in right there. Mm-hmm. You hustle and work, hustle and work.
Well, one of the biggest things that I talk about all the time is delaying gratification.
Oh, okay. On a professional level or personal level?
Well, it works both ways and it's equally as successful. So we know we have IQ, right? Mm-hmm. Intelligence quotient.
Right.
There's a lot to be said for EQ, emotional quotient.
Emotional intelligence?
And, right, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I'm just making sure.
And one of the factors that, you know, will gauge how successful you'll be in your endeavors, one of those is can you delay gratification?
Okay.
And it makes sense, right? Because a lot of times people will drop out if they feel they haven't had quick enough success. So if you stay in it, guys, just the numbers are in your favor.
My mother raised me to be persistent. She kind of beat it into my head. So, you know, okay, well, we're going to stay on you. So you're doing well because you're getting the auditions, and in Los Angeles that's a lot. Mm-hmm. Right. From what I remember. What I want to also talk to you about is, like, how did you get, like, okay, so, you know, Public Words Project is about public speaking and using your public words wisely. So how do you draw, are they comparable, public speaking and acting?
Sure. I think in a lot of regards.
Okay. I'm listening. I'm all ears.
Well, I, you know, like I said, I always knew I was an actress. Mm-hmm. And along with that, I did a fair share of public speaking, right? I was like head of student council. Had to speak at honor society meetings. Had to speak. I remember being in high school and we had these statewide competitions, drama competitions.
Nice.
And so, you know, you'd perform a monologue or do a scene. Doing a monologue is like public speaking.
It is.
But it's a different work in many ways, and you get to sort of immerse yourself in a character. But I think what makes public speaking easier or can alleviate some of your anxiety is when you imagine that you're just talking to one person in the room.
That is great advice. Okay, so we're gonna stop right there. Everyone listen to that. That is great advice. When you're public speaking, you're talking to just one person.
Just one person.
That's a lot of wisdom right there.
That's what helps me. I mean, you know, if you can focus in on someone. And here's the thing. I'm a Meisner-trained actress.
Yes.
And Meisner training...
I know what that is, but please share.
Well, the only thing that's... It's complex, but the only thing that I want to say about that in regards to what we're speaking about is that in Meisner training, when you're working on a scene, it isn't about what's going on inside of you. It's what's going on with the other person. So when you put your attention on the other person, naturally your anxiety will fall away. So if you're talking to someone in a crowd of six people, mm-hmm. it might be nice to make eye contact with all six people. But if you're talking to a crowd of 600 people, that's just not going to be possible.
Yeah. So you have to use a different strategy.
So Pumpkin was looking at me.
Sorry,
so
Pumpkin.
I think it's just helpful to sort of focus in on a person or two and see how they're processing what they're hearing that you're saying. Mm-hmm. So that if you're looking at them and taking in how they're receiving your information, then it's all about them and it ain't about you.
Okay.
So you don't have to be so anxiety ridden.
That's really good. That's really good. That's good. That's good stuff. I'm thinking, and I'm supposed to be talking. I know you guys are listening, but I'm thinking right now, and I'm nodding my head. And I'm trying to make sound as I'm thinking, which is difficult for me. I mean, that's why one of the things, like when I do the coaching and when I help people, you know, Paul and I came from Cal State LA mm-hmm. With theater degrees, and I worked briefly in the theater and at the opera, but it wasn't really my shtick. But what I got out of it was the techniques and the tools mm-hmm. that you're talking about, and I see them, and I just started using them to help people become better public speakers,
right,
and get more comfortable,
right,
and even like, you know, because, you know, some of the acting exercises are crazy and you're just like, oh my god, who's hitting the pipe, you know. I just take like the ones that are like less daunting and won't scare
whatever
people.
Worked,
you know. Mm-hmm. I have to tell you that mirror exercise, I've seen it change the shyest person into a really strong public speaker within mm-hmm. an hour. Because mm-hmm. as soon as you look someone in the eye
yeah.
and you realize you're going to survive, it's like,
what's the worst that can happen?
Right?
Right.
And that, yeah, what's the worst that can happen? Not, once you're upright and you're alive and you can walk off stage and you're safe and sound, that's, you know,
yeah.
worst thing can happen is someone can tell you no or yell at you. But then, you know, you can survive that.
Yeah.
We all can survive
and
that.
And I always think, you know, the central nervous system is sometimes something that we can control and sometimes we can't, right? So if you're starting to get that anxiety, I think the tendency that people feel is to sort of want to make it stop. And
you can use it.
You can use it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and even when you say, hey, guys, I'm feeling a little nervous right now, that's going to, like, help it just wash away. Even just admitting that, you know. So that's another tool, you know.
Great. Or even advice feeling again.
Something,
yeah.
Like turning your attention to something sensory. Mm-hmm. So if you have this anxiety come up and, you know, you can focus on what you're feeling in the moment, what you can touch. So for me, what's very grounding is if I can touch my fingers together, mm-hmm. you know, or, hey, do I smell something in the air? Or do I see something that's interesting? And just anything to sort of get out of your own way.
Well said. Well mm-hmm. said. I have to say that out of everyone we spoke to, you're giving more procedural advice on how to be a better speaker. And that's why I wanted to talk to you because...
Well, that's the incident commander in me.
She's funnier than I realized, too. So this was something that you wanted to do, and when did you know you were comfortable or you wanted to perform when you were younger? What was, like, I'm asking because, like, if someone's listening to you that's younger or someone who's trying to figure out their path, just tell me a little bit about, like, how you discovered
It's such this. A tough thing, but I have a really visceral, and visceral might be my favorite word, actually.
Okay, we're going to switch that.
Yeah, let's switch that. I have a very visceral memory. I was so nervous. I was 12 and
nervous in general or just
no to do this coming up. And I, by that point, I already knew what I wanted to do, but this was the pivotal moment.
Okay.
And I waited. My dad always takes 2 hours to eat dinner. Slow eater. My mother eats quickly, starts cleaning, starts moving on to the next task. Mm-hmm. So I knew this. My dad was still eating. My mother was in the kitchen with the ironing board out and ironing clothes. And I went down and I bravely told them what I wanted to do with my life.
Okay.
And I said, I want to go and audition for Arts High School. I'm going to be an actress. And my mother was furious.
Yes.
Furious. She said, over my dead body, and she slammed the iron down. And my father said, I'll take the girl.
Wow.
And my mother walked out of the room. Now, I have the most supportive parents in the world, right?
Right. Mm-hmm.
And my dad did take me to the audition, and I did get in. But just that first year, I was cast in the lead. Cinderella wore combat boots. And my parents came to see it, and they have been my biggest supporters since that day.
Nice.
But my mother's fear was that, you know, here my daughter wants to be an actress. Great. She, you know, she's going to have a life of poverty.
Right.
Which I do not have a life.
No, you don't.
I have a wonderful life.
I'm in your pad. It's not poverty.
And so I don't know how I got to that moment. I know that I played Lucy in a play, and I was Winnie the Pooh in a play, and... Oh, my mother always had me read out of the Bible in church.
Okay.
There was a large congregation of folks, and I was probably 8 or 9 doing that.
That's definitely public speaking.
Definitely public speaking, and in a different language, speaking Portuguese. So, but it was that night, you know, that I was like, I'm going to go for it. And that was it. The whole trajectory of my whole life was changed that night.
I applaud you for that, because I had that conversation with my parents at 22. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's different when you're of color or of an ethnic background or...
A woman, a girl,
a young girl. Because a lot of communities of color don't understand, like, the arts. Like, this is how I'm going to make my living. Because that's not usually the tradition.
Yeah.
So you tell them that, and I'm instantly like, well, how are you going to pay your bills? Mm-hmm. Well, I'll figure it out.
You know, I remember when I bought my first apartment in New York, the realtor said, hey, I really want to congratulate you because you have great credit for an actress. I was like, what? Okay, thanks, I think. Yeah, it doesn't mean that you have to be poor. And, you know, certainly sometimes you have to do other things to supplement your income. But no shame in the game. You have to follow your heart.
Well, I think you're giving a lot of great pointers without having to be guided. So I appreciate that. And this is stuff that's really valuable. And it's great information, and I'm learning a little bit more about you. Is there something you want me to ask you? Is there something you want to share that I may have missed?
Nothing really comes to mind. I guess my whole thing is just public speaking and acting are similar to me in the sense that there's something you want to communicate.
Yes.
There's something you want to share.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So mm-hmm. just try to get that intention across. Whatever that desire is, whatever that is that you want to share with someone. That's the important thing.
I also find it fascinating too, like I was in politics for a little while, mm-hmm. and I found them to be very theatrical. And I think as an adult now, as we're watching the politics of now, mm-hmm. it's very theatrical. And running campaigns for different people, you're basically having little theater productions that you have to, you have the hero and the villain, mm-hmm. and all those tactics. You got to get actors to share your message.
Yep.
And you have to do a lot of public speaking in a lot of different situations.
Right.
So have you ever had like a super difficult audience when you've been performing live or public speaking?
I did a play once, and I was in high school. I think I was like a junior in high school, and we were doing this tour of Midsummer Night's Dream.
Oh, you were touring it? That's always fun.
We were touring it, yeah. And we went to this retirement home, and it was the most, how shall I put it, excited bunch of senior men that wanted to chase us around. Albeit some in their wheelchairs, but they were very handsy and gropey and chasing. And so, you know,
I'm closing my eyes and I can see it. Oh my God. I'm so sorry, sister.
And it was pretty funny at the time. I mean, not in this Me Too movement, no one would appreciate that. And we were of course teenagers, yeah. But, all's well that ended well. No one was seriously, affected.
My worst audience wasn't even public speaking or politically public speaking. When I was younger and I was doing stand-up comedy,
mm-hmm.
and someone
booked
me in Westchester, deep in the South Bay, and I guess it was a bar where people who just got out of jail went to hang out.
Ooh, okay.
And I had to be 24, uh-huh. 25. I was just so young and cute and pretty and just like innocent, and I just wanted to tell. I just wanted to make people laugh. Yeah.
Yeah.
They're like, I had two dirty jokes.
Mm-hmm.
I told them, they erupted.
Right.
And they're like, Stacy. I'm like, no, that's the only thing. That's like, and then I had to forcefully move my way out of the bar.
Wow.
One guy, I remember very, very clearly, this old vato in a wheelchair, mm-hmm. broken See? Leg. He turned and blocked the way and was trying to grab
Whoa.
My nether regions. And mm-hmm. I was like, no, thank you, sir. And then, I realized his chair wasn't locked, and I just kind of pushed him down the barway, and then people were just watching him like roll down the barway, and I just like I ran out. My friend was there. I'm like, run. So
wow.
I figured if I could survive that, I could survive anything.
If you can do stand up, you can do anything. You can do absolutely anything.
I can't act though. I could never act.
Well, once you're on stage butt naked, you can pretty much do anything.
Share?
Oh, I did two. One on either both coasts. The same
both
play.
Both coasts butt naked? Bi-coast butt naked?
Both coasts butt naked. That was a lot of folks. Yeah, it was a play by Luis Alfaro called Oedipus el Rey. And I did the world premiere at the Magic in San Francisco. And then a year later with a totally different cast and crew in Washington, D.C. at the Woolly Mammoth. And so basically, we're talking about at least 10 weeks of being naked in front of people on stage. So, listen,
that's brave.
Whatever doesn't kill you.
But as an actor, that's really brave. As a person's really brave. And that's just brave in general. But, like, I have to tell you, to be able to do that naked, and then it takes a lot of talent.
Naked love scene with your own son. Of course, you don't know he's your son. This is Oedipus. But again, it's the same thing. when I was focused in on the other person, I forgot about my own nudity, you mm-hmm. know, became about the beauty of his body, mm-hmm. you know. So when you put the emphasis on the other person, you're doing all right.
I appreciate talking to you because everything I'm doing right now is focusing on the person finding comfort within their own skin.
Right.
And I have to tell you, I haven't thought about it outside of one's own skin. So I appreciate you saying that because I think it's an excellent tool. And it's also an excellent point of view because if I work with somebody or I'm with somebody who can't do that, mm-hmm. this is an excellent skill and tool to teach them. And
it's a little bit of Meisner and it's a little bit about just being compassionate because when you're really listening to someone, that's a form of compassion.
This is true. This is true. It's generosity and compassion. Mm-hmm. Definitely. Listening to somebody is definitely being generous and compassionate.
Yeah.
Well, Romy, I have to tell you, this has been fantastic.
Fun.
We're at 25 minutes and some change, so
it
went fast, didn't it?
Yeah, it went super quickly. And Pumpkin didn't bark one time. You did such a good job, Pumpkin.
Pumpkin. Hashtag Pumpkin's awesome.
Yeah, hashtag Chihuahuas rock.
So we're going to put this on our podcast channel, Anchor, and Anchor disseminates it across everything.
Okay.
So it'll be populated across all the platforms by Saturday.
Great.
And I'm going to share on Instagram and then we'll put it on our website and we want to celebrate you. And
it's been really, really fun. And I hope that, you know, I love people and I love reaching out to folks. So I hope that maybe this made a difference out there.
I think it did.
To someone.
I think you did. And I think you did. I think you will. And I think you have.
Thanks.
So thank you so much for being so generous with your time.
Thank you. All right.
Bye.
See you guys.